Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fucking Sony. Downgrading like douches once again. Always pulling some shit with their one and done exclusives. Hashtag shady business. Hashtag never fails. Next tweet. This isn't Sony fault. Blame at Insomniac Games. Next tweet. There is no downgrade. The sun moved during the course of development, which changed the lighting in the scene, and we reduced the amount of puddles there. Please enjoy the hour of amazing footage we've released since the E3 illustrating this. That is a tiny little tweet thread ending on a tweet by James Stevenson, who is a developer, I believe a community manager at Insomniac Games. And today, we're going to be talking a little bit about Puddlegate, gamer entitlement, and technology. It's going to be a good one. This is Waypoint Radio, episode 184. It's Friday, September 7th, 2018, and I'm Danielle Riendo. Joining me today are Natalie Watson.
Hi.
Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
And Rob Zachney.
Hello.
So this is one that kind of happened right before we went to PAX, and a whole bunch of things sort of occurred and happened, this Puddlegate controversy, which basically at its on its face is about people were complaining about an E3 demo of Marvel's Spider-Man, which is the proper title.
Please be specific.
Excuse me. All right. Marvel's Spider-Man, the PlayStation 4 game that is out this week. Is that right? Or is it next week?
Yeah, it came out yesterday, based on the publication of this podcast.
Perfect. Came out yesterday. Streamed it yesterday, and folks were complaining about a week before release that the visuals had been downgraded. And this was based on some screenshots of the E3 demo, which showed a sort of room with combat that had a lot of puddles and shadows and lighting and all sorts of other sort of fancy magic tricks going on, compared to a screenshot of the same room from the final build, which appeared to have fewer puddles and less shadows in the puddles, lighting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this caused a controversy where a lot of gamers, capital G gamers, I would say, were upset that the visuals were downgraded in the couple of months since E3, that the final game would not look as nice, it would not be as pretty, it would not be as impressive technically as what was shown in the demo. So that is sort of what we're starting at here. This is Puddlegate. And it caused quite a bit of a stir. I went on the old YouTubes today. I took a look at what people were saying about this. And there were plenty of smaller YouTubers who were kind of talking about this and saying, oh, you know, Sony and marketing and PR blitz, it's always bullshit. But quite a few of the bigger YouTubers were actually sort of making fun of this sentiment. So the sort of sentiment was all over the place on this. I guess we should probably start off, Patrick, you've played the game, you've beaten the game, you've reviewed it. We should probably start off with how Spider-Man actually looks and plays, and whether or not there was sort of anything there to the controversy.
So Spider-Man anyway. It's a very good game. You can read my review up on the site. There's an audio read that and a conversation there with Austin as well. You know, all the gameplay story stuff aside, it's a gorgeous game. It's a very pretty game. Certainly one of the prettiest I've seen, although that's kind of par for the course for brand new game, prettiest game you've ever seen. But it has a very nice aesthetic to it, going for sort of pseudo-realism. It's not going trying to ape a comic book panel. It's going for more along the lines of you know, the films and things like that. But it's very colorful. It's very pretty. At no point in the game did I ever think to myself it needs more puddles or that the lighting was off. It's a really good looking video game. So that part of it, I can authentically say that I liked the way that game looked.
Good. Good. Yeah. And I actually watched the sort of Digital Foundry. And if you don't know Digital Foundry, they do sort of technical analysis and to some degree artistic analysis. They talk about sort of tech art quite a bit in their videos. You can check that out on YouTube. But I watched the whole Digital Foundry breakdown of the game, which goes in even very specifically to that room that people were very upset about. And talks about how it looks like an artistic choice was made to actually just have something like fewer puddles. But the way they actually rendered sort of the reflection of other buildings in the puddles was the thing that was changed, right? So they have a different sort of reflection system for what goes on. There's a very, very technical, specific breakdown for how that works. But the overall analysis was that, no, this is actually a very, very visually impressive game. It looks like there were actual upgrades to the visuals in many ways, different types of shadows, different types of rendering, et cetera, et cetera. Really just sort of debunking the idea that, oh, Sony showed something and then made a crappier version for the final release. Rob, go ahead.
But the difference is, like, Digital Foundry are a group of people who know what the fuck they're talking about.
Exactly.
When it comes to tech. Like, and that's the thing.
Exactly.
We're at a point, like, we are at a point in games technology where for a lot of, like, your laypersons, they're not going to have the eyes or technical knowledge to really identify what is a creative choice versus what is an expression of, like, a technical limitation, right? Like, you know, the Digital Foundry video is interesting because one of the other things that they sort of keyed on is that people were noticing that the game just, there was the sense that the game in the final release just looked less good. And one of the things that, like, Digital Foundry pointed out is that that E3 demo does look different. It looks glossy and shiny, and sort of like when you go to a big box retailer or something. They got the TVs set up everywhere, and they're all just cranked up to 11, right? Like maximum color saturation, maximum vividness, edge enhancement, all that crap. That isn't actually, like, better for visuals. In fact, it's actually bad, but it does make it pop more. It makes it a little more vivid. It makes the image stand out a little bit more in a crowded field, the kind of field you'd also get in a trade show environment little bit. But the final version of the game is a little more restrained, as clearly Insomniac were like, you know, the spider suit is supposed to be fabric, right? It's not, it's there shouldn't be, like, a weird sheen on it. It's cloth.
He's not sweating all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's lots of little choices like that. But there is this weird suspicion toward developers that, like, somehow there are developers out there not giving players their money's worth, not rewarding players for the fancy hardware they've bought, not taking full advantage of the technical resources they have available. And so you get these weird fixations on shit like puddles and reflections, and it's because it is a thing that a layperson can look at and think they can make a judgment off of that because it seems like an easy benchmark, but it isn't. Like, it's yet another place where you just don't have the eyes or technical expertise.
Natalie.
Or the thing is that there's, like, an intentional deception. Like, this was, like, intentionally done. Like, there was, like, almost like a, you know, we, from the developer side, like, we know we can fool them into, you know, giving them the big glossy thing and then just give them what we're really giving them and hopefully they won't notice, or, like, you know, they're, you know, not perceptive enough to notice, or, like, they're trying to sneak something by them, which is, like, probably the most alarming thing to me, is that there's, like, a paranoia about, you know, what, and I mean, this goes, you know, beyond just, you know, gamer audience, and it has to do with media consumption in general, but this, like, paranoia that what we're being given is being intentionally fed to us with, you know, like, malicious initiative is, like, very concerning to me, because that's such a strained relationship between player and developer. There's no way to navigate that in a way that is going to be productive or on either side. So And it's hard for me to wrap my head around feeling that paranoia, because I never expect, like, I don't know. I've like been thinking about this since we were talking about doing this for the podcast, is like trying to wrap my head around being in that perspective of that consumer feeling deceived. Cause I don't think I've ever felt intentionally deceived by a developer for giving me something that is slightly, you know, less peas in quality or whatever from the original, you know, trailer that I had seen. Yeah. And also, yeah, so I'll just leave there for now. But that is just such a strange feeling for me to wrap my head around, because these are, you know, products. They're not just products. They're you know, artistic works. Like, they're truly, like, what it comes down to are these are a conglomeration of all sort of different art mediums, and they're not just, I mean, we'll talk about that in a second, I think, based on some homework that Danielle gave us to read earlier. but they're not just, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and some of that comes from the history of bull shots, right? Which was a sort of the term you would use in a 90s magazine, 90s video game magazine, for, you know, a beautiful screenshot that was clearly not running on sort of the target hardware. There was the whole idea of, like, this is a bull shot instead of, you know,
I want to defend bull shot. I want to defend bull shot.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with it. I'm just sort of like, I feel like there is a history here of context with, oh, but it never seemed to be. Now, correct me if I'm wrong with bull shots, and I want to hear your take on bull shots for sure. But with bull shots, it always seemed like there was a sort of smiling quality to it. Like, oh yeah, that's a bull shot. But people weren't whipped up into a frenzy or sort of a consumerist nightmare conspiracy theory about it. It was sort of like, this is a PR screenshot. Okay, we'll see what the final game looks like, but it's a bull shot. It seemed honestly like the writers of those magazines were kind of doing the dance and contextualizing that for people, but it does feel very different. This kind of thing, this puddle gate, I hate adding gate to things, but it was added to, you know, the term, so we'll just go with it. It does feel qualitatively different. It does feel like of a piece with what you're sort of starting in there, Natalie, with the sort of you know, sort of consumerist conspiracy theory. But I do, Rob, want to hear your take.
No, I
on
just
bullshots.
I think the frustration, because bullshots I've seen used a lot more recently. I actually saw it more in games coverage in like the late 2000s, early 10s, but this, like, Ubisoft were particularly egregious publisher in this regard, where, like, the reason those screenshots were frustrating weren't just that, like, they were passed off as, like, what the game would actually look like and even be, and what you saw in those games were, like, mechanically impossible scenarios within the game, right? Like, it was a weird thing where, like, there are things implied in those shots about what the game would actually be, like, what you'd be doing and playing, that were just manifestly like, that is never going to happen in this game. That is not what this game is even about. Like, that is not the experience of this game. And there was kind of this sort of brief window where not only were these screenshots, like, wildly touched up and sort of, you know, enhanced in a variety of ways, but also they were sort of carefully composed in a way that I think that was a case where that did start to feel a little bit like deceptive advertising, because it was a case where you weren't playing up the visuals of a game, you were also misrepresenting what you'd be playing.
It even was. Yeah. Patrick, sorry, I know you had something there a second ago.
Oh, that's fine. You know, I think there's not a huge jump between sort of like the entitled, like, nerd culture isn't full of entitlement and wish fulfillment and catering, in large part due to marketing that tries to make people that are in fandoms feel at the center of the universe and things are supposed to be catered to. I mean, in some degree, that is true of consumerism writ large. But I think we see this a lot in gaming marketing and slogans and the way often gamers, because they, you know, video games are unique in the regard where there is a player, there is an interaction, there is a push and pull between creator and person interacting in a way that is manifestly different than in a film. But, you know, exhibit A, go see, you know, the reaction to The Last Jedi as, you know, an incredible example of sort of fan entitlement over what they think they deserve and what they should get and what is actually delivered to them. And I think we see this all the time in video games. And I think on top of that, there's also, you know, I can't speak to every game critic, I cannot speak to every games journalist, every games writer, but I would say I think it is easy to say as a blanket statement that the vast majority of game critics are also like not technically savvy. They can tell the difference between a bad frame rate and a good frame rate. I think we saw manifestly in when 4K stuff was coming around that like I've said quite honestly, like I've seen, you can show me 1080p and 4K side by side, I can tell the difference. If you were just to put one in front of me and take the other away, I don't know if I could tell you the difference. Yeah. Part of that is my unfamiliarity with 4K displays. I don't have a lot. I don't have any in my house. But also, just technical stuff just doesn't bother me as much. Like it does bother me, right? Like so, like when I was playing Dead Cells on Switch, that game has frame rate issues that impact your ability to play that game. Like that is a problem. Like that is that is not being entitled to say this game should run at a better frame rate. But I do think there is the case. What's part of what contributes to this is across the board a lack of technical expertise amongst critics. So then critics tend to hand wave technical stuff in a way that there are segments of players that that stuff is important to them. It's a lot more important in PC culture than it is in console culture, because in PC culture, you have control over it. You can buy a better graphics card. You can buy a better CPU. Some of that stuff exists in console games, especially with the Pro and Xbox One X and, like, the existence of, like, graphical options. Like, that stuff is filtering into consoles a little bit as they get kind of PC'd. But I think there also is sort of a gap between some players and some critics where I can hand wave that stuff away because it just doesn't, you know, the difference. If a frame rate drops in a Far Cry game, like, whatever. But that may be more important to some players. The existence of things like Digital Foundry are useful for me because I can say, look, I don't give a shit about this. If you do, here is someone I can point you to that can answer your questions for you.
But I think that one of the aspects of PC culture that's definitely making its way into games, in part because things like the Xbox One X exist and the PS4 Pro exist, is this idea that with like video card marketing and like PC component marketing, there's always this sort of promise that like, look, you spring for this stuff, you're going to get a better experience in some way. And like it baked into like the bones of PC gaming as a hobby is this sense that like part of it is that ability to get greater fidelity, greater greater results for what you put into the hobby, for what you spend on it. And it was for a long time, like that's what sold ads. That's what sort of informed the culture. It's what a lot of PC gaming magazines focused on because, like,
this game
just
is
going to
break your video card.
Yeah, you know? If you like, just want to play video games, you could play. You be a console kitty, right? Like, but the reason you're a PC gamer is so that you can hot rod your rig, for Christ's sake, and somehow that's going to be a better thing, especially if it has neon on it. But what that has sort of made its way in because, like, I have a PS4. I don't see a lot of reason for me to get by a PS4 Pro. But like, imagine if I did. You're kind of making that promise again of like, look, this little extra bit of visual fidelity you're going to get, you're going to be rewarded for it. If you give us your $400, you'll be rewarded. You will get to enter the promised land of true gamers, where everything looks photorealistic and it's, you know, the portal on your wall into another world will finally open for you. And I think that's a little bit of like this is the double-edged sword, and it's especially double-edged now because the gains are so marginal. You know, in like in 2000, buying a new video card, you would see immediately like, holy shit, this game looks like you can move up an entire like category of like resolution. You'd improve your resolution, improve detail level. You would see it.
When 3D graphic cards came around, like when I bought my first 3DFX card for Quake, it introduced translucency in the water. Like, I couldn't see through the water in software rendering mode. I got a graphics card, and then I could see through that fucking water. Like, that was like, that was a holy shit. Like, wow, this is a manifestly different gameplay experience. And, like, as that has been flattened out, it is tied games tighter and tighter to the idea that, well, if it runs better, if it looks better, it is better. And that is true for some genres, right? Like, there are genres that are intrinsically tied to technical expertise, like a fighting game, right? Like, there's a reason those run at 60 frames a second because of input, right? But that has been, like, sort of, like, broadly applied to all games. And, like, yes, I wish every game was 60 frames a second, but the lack of that does not mean this game is lacking. But I think that expectation has, like, that exists, that entitlement exists, and that is the fault of, like, a lot of people. That is not, in some way, gamers, but is in a lot, you know, other ways, you know, marketing and what's been promised, and then that expectation gets baked in.
Yeah, and then there's, you know, a punishment, because that means that, you know, oh, I'm not buying the game at all, or I'm, you know, I won't play the game at all, if there is that difference, if there is, like, that is
liars.
Also,
they,
like,
still buy the game. Liars. They are all liars. You still buy that
a
game.
Liar.
It's okay. Just, it's so, like, fundamentally.
Is, I get it. Yeah. Oh, it was
that's
Pixel.
Not Socks, actually.
Pixel was mad. I get it.
Socks is asleep.
Okay, good. Sorry. Wrong dog.
Wrong dog. But yeah, so, like, the idea that, you know, sure, it may be disappointing to see some, you know, downgrade in quality. Sure. Like, you know, you want games to be beautiful. And when games aren't as beautiful as you might have thought they were going to be, I am just the tiniest bit sympathetic to, like, oh, maybe, you know, that's a little bit of a disappointment. But I could never imagine just not playing or buying the game and, like, sort of, like, boycotting with your dollar. That's what the whole Puddlegate thing was, is that, like, people aren't going to buy the game over the puddles, right? Like,
it's also, man, it's complicated because, like, how much is this, how much was this actually a thing? And then how much was this a thing because Insomniac acknowledged it? How much did this become a thing because, as a result of Insomniac acknowledging it, it shoots up on Reddit, and then different publications write about it. And then in response to the different publications writing about it, you get YouTube videos for and against and riffing on it. Like, there's no way around saying, like, this isn't also part of, like, outrage culture and the monetization of outrage culture. And that, I'm not saying it wasn't a news story, right? Like, it's difficult for me to say, like, oh, Kotaku shouldn't have written a piece about this and all the other outlets that ran something about it. At the same time, like, aren't we just, like, elevating bad actors and bad faith arguments by writing about that at all? That said, I'm sympathetic where it's like, if something's at the top of Reddit, people are talking about it. And you can't just ignore that. At Waypoint, we just ignored stuff like that, like, because that's not part of our business model. But, like, the line between people are talking about it over here, I think a part of it is approach, right? Like, if it's just covering people said a thing is not a news story. But if it's people said a thing and this is fit within a larger context, let us explain why people are doing that, I can see the argument. But I think that this was elevated in a way that is partially, I think, Insomniac's fault, because if they didn't say anything, then it doesn't become an official line. But once it's an official line, like, I can't blame places like Kotaku for being like, well, Insomniac acknowledged it, so it's a thing, because they made it a thing.
But I think so, on, like, speaking on Sony as a company, their silence has always been paid attention to, because they notoriously go silent when asked, like, questions on, you know, different things. I don't know. I don't, you know, want to reference any, I don't think it's necessary to reference anything specific, but, like, you know, when it comes to, like, maybe crossplay or different things like that, they notoriously go silent, and it's very noticeable. And so, in that context, like, this being a Sony exclusive, like, there is that kind of, like, tension tied to it where, like, if there isn't something said, people are going to notice because it is a Sony game. At least that would be my assumption. If nothing had been said, I could have easily seen there being sort of a big thing being made of the silence itself.
And the idea that don't feed the trolls doesn't hold water anymore, right? Like, it's very much the trolls are going to win no matter what you do, so you can defend yourself or you cannot defend yourself. But there's very much a a sense of, well, developers are going to be harassed on some level. I'm not saying this is necessarily the same level of harassment that other kerfuffles or other really horrible incidences of harassment have entailed. But we're in a culture now where it can't just be a small thing. Exactly what you were saying a minute ago, Patrick. Like, everything blows up. Everything becomes, whether it's a story in the media or just a story amongst YouTubers, and it blows up and everybody gets whipped into a frenzy, to borrow a phrase you used once when talking about harassment and talking about sort of this culture of just sort of rage and entitlement and harassment, right? It never stays small anymore. It could have been maybe smaller, possibly. Yeah, absolutely. But it's one of those things where I have some sympathy for the developers in terms of, you've worked on this game and it's by all measures looks like a good game. They've done a good job with it. And, you know, some random asshole, hundreds of random assholes on Twitter are, you know, saying, it's your fault. Why'd you screw up? Why'd you do this? Why are you such liars? I could imagine being frustrated with that and using the line that we opened the show on, which was, here, there's an hour of footage out there. You can go look at it. Like, attempting to let the work speak for itself, even though you're obviously like responding to somebody who's potentially being kind of trollish. Go ahead.
Well, and is there an element of like, nobody wants to be the next Mass Effect Andromeda in this, yeah, where it's like, in different cases, like Mass Effect Andromeda literally like didn't work out of the box, basically, right? Like, there were huge problems with that game at launch, and that game threw up a lot of like really embarrassing glitches and errors and problems.
Yeah, and that became sort of like what people were talking about in that first like 48 hours, and in some ways defined the first impression.
Right, and so I can understand where there is sort of a instinct toward erring on the side of being proactive and heading the stuff off by, you know, being quick to say like, no, hold on, you're still getting all those pixels you paid for, don't worry about it. But something that I found interesting a second ago was Natalie talking about it, you know, having sympathy, like a small amount of sympathy for people who, they want their game to be beautiful, and makes like, and if they're going to be disappointed when it's a shade less beautiful than it was. But I'm not sure, like, I don't think this tech fetishism has much to do with beauty anymore. Like, yeah, it did, like, again, yeah, like, 15, 20 years ago when this culture was really starting to form, like, the difference between water that is translucent versus, like, a blue block sitting in a level, that is going to be, like, the translucent water can be, like, you know, quite beautiful compared to what came before. We're kind of at a point where beauty is not something that's going to be remotely determined in a game by technical limitations.
Graphical, yeah.
Yeah, it's artistic choices from a lot of different people. And I think one of the things that the game industry has lagged behind is, I don't think the game industry ever learned how to talk about these products, how to talk about these creative works, in a tone that was not fundamentally consumer electronics speak,
yeah,
in some ways, like that they were new tech, they were new gadgets, they were new tech products. And we've been out of that mode for a long time in terms of the technologies involved and the limitations involved, but we still have these conversations, in part driven by console generations and video card cycles. We still talk about these as if, okay, well, the next technology is going to do all this shit for you. But really what is probably more useful to know at this point is discussing more of the craft of game art, game lighting. But that's not something we've ever transitioned to, like, knowing how to talk about. And we've certainly never spotlighted any of the people who create that art.
Yeah, that's a major problem. And when something like that happens, when, you know, when, for example, the Horizon Zero Dawn, another kerfuffle in sort of like video game lighting, and it wasn't just lighting, it was more rendering. It was sort of how a scene was rendered. There's a minor incident over a video where the developers of Horizon Zero Dawn sort of were talking about a particular technique. I don't remember the exact name. I know it's something, occlusion culling or something like that, right? just explaining a fairly basic technique for rendering a scene, but everyone on the internet supposedly had an opinion or got angry about either how basic this was, why don't the dumbasses understand this immediately? There was sort of that tone amongst some developers and some critics of like, oh, you know, basically how stupid people must be if they don't know that this is a basic technique, and B, the fact that a lot of people actually really don't know how any of this works. So there's that massive disconnect again, and it's not the same exact disconnect we're talking about here, but it is very much along the lines of tech fetishization and thinking you know what you're talking about, which is what so many of these folks, I think, who got very angry or who got whipped up into this particular frenzy, you know, the Digital Foundry video actually goes into the fact that the technique that people were talking about, the people that maybe are not game artists, they weren't even talking about the correct technique that was used to light this particular scene. They actually had the term completely wrong. They were talking about something completely different. And again, I'm not going to trip over what those exact terms are. Definitely go see that Digital Foundry video for the exact breakdown. It's very much in layman's terms. It's understandable. But I think a lot of people think they sure know a lot about game development that they don't necessarily. Certainly there are plenty of developers who are willing to comment and weigh in on these kinds of things who do know what they're talking about. But a vast majority, I think, and I'm going to just make a judgment call here and say I think a majority of people who got into this frenzy aren't necessarily game developers or don't necessarily actually know the techniques or the craft or what goes into this. They just got really mad because X, Y, and Z. Right. That has to do with tech fetishization. That has to do with a sense of entitlement towards having the very, very best because they purchased the very, very best. And maybe they watched something and they understood part of it. Maybe they picked up a few phrases along the way, but they're not actually necessarily experts in the field. And I think personally, I think that's a lot of what's going on here. So yeah. Go ahead, Natalie. You had something.
No,
I was going to read a quote.
Read a quote, please.
I was going to read a comment. I'm not going to call this person out. It's a comment from YouTube. It was from a YouTuber, a response to a YouTuber, smaller YouTuber, who talked about this. And their tone was very much, yeah, of course it doesn't look as good, but why should we be surprised? You know, it was very, it wasn't fiery. It was more, you know, slightly spurned, but still excited about the game. And the commenter here really goes through a whole bunch of this. So I thought this was a very good representative kind of quote here. So here's the comment. This is simply disingenuous and people are getting fed up with it. We're capable of understanding the difference between in-game footage and a CG trailer, but you don't see a problem when they claim it's in-game footage, and while that's technically true, you'll never get the same in-game experience whether you own a standard PS4 or the Pro. I consider myself to be a much more gameplay-oriented gamer and see graphics as secondary to things like controls, gameplay, nuances, and story, but it's pretty tiring, and looking into this after hearing about it in every gaming news outlet, it's just being smug and chuckling through the segment about Puddlegate like it's the fans' fault for being overhyped in the first place. When it was practices such as these that caused the hype in the first place. Like, imagine I'm a contractor and you wanted a flight of stairs built. I show you a picture I had supposedly built before, and it's made of marble and winds up in a spiral and looks amazing. I tell you, hey, go away for a few months, and when you're back, you'll have the same thing. Now imagine you've come back and it's slapped together with plywood and duct tape and only makes it halfway up from floor to floor. Wouldn't you be pretty pissed off when I tell you, oh no, the sun's just a different angle, dude? Maybe you shouldn't defend the industry for bad marketing practices and try to see it from the perspective of frustrated players. Because while at times it can be a bed of testosterone-fueled childish nonsense, but at other times they have a point and they aren't just mad for the sake of something to be mad about.
But that's not what's happening here. Like, you don't have a non-functioning set of stairs.
Are we talking about the Republicans' good faith arguments here? They just want to compromise.
I think that's maybe what's going on.
Like, the person's not wrong, like, capital W wrong, but that is engaging in far too much good faith over, like, the reasons that people are acting this way, as opposed to people just being shitty and entitled and wanting everything their way.
It's bogus in the way that, like...
That analogy doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. It's like you got a different marble than you were shown in the photograph. You know what I mean? Like, that's the equivalent. It's not that, like, yeah, this is a staircase, right? And it's duct tape and, like, cardboard. No,
it doesn't doesn't function. Like, it's still functioning. Yeah, continue, Rob.
I don't know. I don't have much more than that. I don't understand psychology of this in some ways. You know what it reminds me of is you're running you're driving on the highway, and someone just like pulls up behind you, gets right on your fucking ass, and it's just like, you know, just riding your tail, and you're like, okay, like you clearly want to get moving, I'll get out of the way. And they go like 2 miles an hour faster, pull up alongside you, and then they just stop accelerating. And what they don't, like, they have no sense of how fast they're going. They're not, the point isn't to go fast. The thing that drives them nuts is that someone is in their way. That someone, you know what I mean? Like, that they are not the fastest. That they are not getting somewhere ahead of anyone else. They are not getting some sort of special result out of this. That is the thing that I see a lot on. I make a lot of analogies to traffic since moving to Boston. Honestly, like, there's an entire experience of humanity that you get on the freeways around here, but.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is kind of what it reminds me of, is like, it's only this sense of injustice because this person got wedded to this one idea from one thing they saw and what they thought it implied. And when that's taken away, all they can feel is that somehow they've been cheated.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I got another
one. Thing I will say is up until maybe 6 years ago, I can't remember how long ago it is, that I got into playing PC games. I played everything on a console, like, because I told myself that, you know, it's just easier and I don't want to deal with the PC. And if you're in that mindset, it's not that hard. You can do it. I believe in you. And it is worth it to have like a gaming PC, even if it's not top of the line. But the moment I got a gaming PC and like I could play like most games at like 1080, 60 frames a second, like there was a certain bliss in ignorance where I played a lot of games at crummy console frame rates that I just got used to, because I was telling myself, I just don't care about this stuff. Like, frame rate doesn't matter that much. And it's like, no, like, you've just gotten used to, like, swimming around in the garbage. Like, you actually could go over here and, like, play a game, and it functionally makes the game play better and is more enjoyable when it's not chunking along at 19 frames a second when something blows up. And there was a bliss in me not knowing the difference and just, like, settling for what it was. And then once I got a PC, got used to playing things at a certain way, like, I do try to play everything on a PC because it's like, one, I do have control over it, so I can make it like run better. And two, like, it is nicer to have things at a nicer frame rate, like as a general rule. So I don't know. That's just like a change that took over with me that I almost wish I was back in the old world where I was used to my lower expectations because I just didn't know what it was like. And then I got a graphics card and was like, oh, shit. 60 frames a second is pretty good.
I mean, I don't know. I'm just, that's been part of my experience too. Like, I shouldn't be sitting here and being like, yeah, I don't get it. People who focus on this stuff are full of shit. Cause like, and there's a reason I was a PC gamer for years and years and years and didn't get it. Well, also it's totally different types of games. Like, that was probably the more controlling factor. Yeah,
these days it's more about control over the experience than it is about which games you're playing. It used to be that, yeah, you're just going, if you want to play TIE Fighter, you got to own a PC.
Yeah,
like,
that's,
that was just your only option.
Yeah. But there is this element, like, I can't totally disavow being that person who would sit
the
there.
The element of control, right? Like, it's where I think part of a little bit of this, maybe the genuine argument here is this stuff is out of your control, where it's like, look, if this game was on PC, there's probably a slider in there, or I can go into an ini file and I can like modify it and like get those puddles to look exactly how I want to. Whereas on the console, it's like, I'm just at the the developer is just doing what they're doing. If they took it out, like, that's frustrating. Or if you look at the case of, like, The Witcher 3, right? The Witcher 3 went through its own, like, massive, like, downgrade scandal. And that was a result, like, you know, one of the things that CD Projekt talked about was, like, well, we wanted to make money, which meant we wanted to put this out on an Xbox One and a PS4, which means the game was scaled down a lot because it needed to functionally run on three platforms at the same time. And although the PC version looks better, there are just certain things that they couldn't do because it needed to run on a console. You saw, like, a lot of people get, like, very riled up over that notion specifically, because they're like, well, fuck the console players because they ruined our game as a result of having to run on, like, you know, these specialized machines. So, I mean, I think you're right, Rob. I think there is, to some element, like, people being like, I like having that control over things, like, rather than, like, maybe I would rather have the game run at a slower frame rate and I'd rather have those puddles. So just, like, put in the option in there in advanced graphics controls and, like, let me choose how I want that experience to go.
Yeah. The puddles in this case are a metaphor. Like, I'm talking about, like,
about the traffic in Boston.
No, I'm talking about, like, reflections are a weird thing just in games in general. Do you remember in the late 90s, there were, like, lots of reflections that are always really corny. Like, in a shooter, you'd go into a bathroom and you'd see your character sort of in the mirror, and you'd realize
the first game Deus that I saw was Duke Nukem 3D, baby.
Yeah, Deus Ex is the one that in my head, JC Denton, you see what a weird little model.
When you first go into the bathroom and you're like,
yeah.
And that was 100%. Such a weird moment. And that's such a weird, because that was the first time you could, like, see yourself being reflected in the game. But, like, that was, like, significant.
And you hardly ever see it anymore. And for years and years, I was like, well, I don't know, man. Like, I think consoles maybe did, like, change game development, because, like, you used to see reflections in games and now you don't. And the answer is partly, like, reflections are really hard. Like, they look like shit if you just, like, I remember Jake Rodkin talking to us about, like, trying to go through, like, what makes a perfectly reflective surface in a game. And he's like, well, actually, you have to build the world of the game on the other side of this portal so that you're actually looking into a mirrored level and it's being rendered for you to look at. And then it has to do everything you do and move with you. That's sort of wild. Broke his brain. He's describing it. And
it's breaking my brain right
now. Yeah, no, it's like, it's this weird thing. And so there's all these, it's another example of, like, to have something, like, to do a perfect reflection in a game might end up with something that looks really silly and fake and wrong in a way that, like, no reflection in the actual world will ever look like. And so we create all these other, like, methods for evoking what a reflection should look and feel like. But there's this part of, the part of me, to an extent, that's still going to be like, but I remember in Deus Ex, I could see myself in the mirror. And I don't see my reflection anymore. Why not? Like, what happened to the promise of gaming?
Where did I go?
I'm good on not seeing JC's goofy ass mug. I'm good on that, actually.
No, I need to know how cool I am. With the sunglasses and the weird sheen on his face. The leather jacket.
I recognize the significance of the moment in gaming history. But when I played Deus Ex for the first time, I was just like, what is this goofy-ass mug looking back at me?
You do it once, and then you're like, oh, they spent, like, probably dozens of hours doing this thing that I did once.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, like, that looks
weird. I respect
it.
I have a lot of respect, but I'm good.
Respect, but I'm good.
But it's funny, because, like, I don't know. I don't see us being, I mean, this is kind of a through line, I think, throughout the whole argument, is, like, I don't think we're in a place where beauty and, like, visual experience is as tied to, like, the tiny steps that we're making in technical and graphical ability. Whereas, like, Yakuza 2 Kiryu versus Yakuza 2 Kiwami Kiryu, way more beautiful, like, very much, like, that is very obvious, and but going from, like, I don't know, I don't need a game to be like, when I saw Detroit Beyond Human, when I saw that game and, like, people were saying, oh my god, that wasn't beautiful to me. Like, a game doesn't have to look like that to be beautiful to me. Like, a game can be, I don't know, like, anything else, like any other type of like aesthetic presentation, whether it's like pixel, you know, like 8-bit, 16-bit, or, you know, cell shaded or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be looking like my skin. Like, I don't need to see myself in the game for it to be beautiful to me. Like, that is such a weird concept to like want to see like the qualities of my own personness or my own human like biology in a game for it to be beautiful. Like, that's just not what's that's such like a weird like anthropocentric way of measuring beauty in a game, like where you just want to see yourself as, I don't know, that's like some weird shit right there. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah. Like, I'm thinking about like David Cage's whole thing of like, how do I get my virtual actors to look better and more lifelike? His solution was like you know, this is really reductive, but fuck it. David Cage thinks like, if you just make really big detailed eyes with like little micro like gestures and movements in the eyes, he's like, I've captured the essence of humanity. Now I will make a game, and because I've imbued these characters with life, my dog shit writing will also somehow come to life. But like, I do not think I have seen as much like relatable humanity in a David Cage character as I do in like the way characters interact in Yakuza 0. Like, early on, there's a moment where one of the mob bosses like starts breaking down for Kiryu, like, look, kid, here's what you've stumbled into. And he's like, here's the context you're not getting. And I don't know, he just comes across as this rumpled, kind of broken down old boxer. It's the sort of the buff dude, right? But there's something about the way he moves and the combination of like the way that character's like animated and the little gestures and voice and all that comes together to create a virtual performance that's very evocative and relatable and human. And it doesn't look anywhere near as good as like, damn, look at the pores all over that character's skin in Detroit.
Gross.
Like, you don't have that, but we don't, it feels like we lack the vocabulary, the lack the appreciation to discuss these more holistic like effects of creative choices, and instead we focus again and again on technology. Do you remember that disastrous Joel McHale Video Game Awards show where they tried to sell him on TressFX?
Yes.
And there are a lot of things that went wrong in Joel McHale's hosting effort at the Video Game Awards, but they're trying to explain to him like why TressFX with the like realistic hair was good. And they do the whole sales pitch, and they show the video like comparing basically two really good, I think it was The Witcher 3 they were showing him. It was like, they both look amazing, just one has kind of weird hair effects. And they finish it, and Joel's like, yeah, thank God for those Tress effects, because the other version looked like shit. And I feel like that's kind of where we've ended up, is we default to talking about like technologies and new approaches, and not because we don't talk about the other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can see the value in like being able to, like, I think of what was the movie where Rihanna played the little girl or something? Wait, is it was Rihanna with the little alien and the little girl?
I know, it's like Battleship. It's the only
no, there was like the alien Home. Was it Home?
Maybe.
And the girl, like, it was something about, there was like a big thing about it because they were able to animate the little black girl's hair in a way that was very realistic. And like, to me, that's significant. But being able to like show the pores on a face is not. Like, there are certain graphical and technical advances when it comes to, you know, being able to represent like the physicality of things that are not normally represented that have a meaningful significance, like hair, like skin color, like those sort of things are meaningful to me. But when it comes to seeing pores or, you know, weird, I don't know, eye animation, like things like that,
beautiful,
that's not as beautiful retinas. I mean, just nice retinas on this guy, let me tell you. That's not as sick. So there, I do think there are certain physicalities that have like a cultural and representational significance to them, and those things are meaningful. But otherwise, like, I'm good on the puddles. I'm good on the retinas. I don't know.
You heard it here first. Natalie Watson, good on the puddles and the retinas. That's right.
Hear that, Sox? Right. We're good. We're fine.
No puddles, Sox. None of them today. I was going to read a little quote from an essay from James Murph called Identity Crisis, Suburbia, Consumerism, and Video Games. We're actually running along at a pretty good clip, and I think we've handled a lot of sort of what that piece talks about. So I'll just shout out that piece if you want to read a little bit more about sort of gamer entitlement, consumerism, and so on and so forth. That's a good one to check out. And I think unless we have more on puddles, if we're good on puddles, we can move to a quick question bucket. I guess that's a puddle of its own sort, right? It's a puddle in a bucket, perhaps?
I guess I am curious.
Can puddles be in buckets?
Are you saying like
existential question?
Is that what Rob is curious about?
Is it?
I don't know. I don't know. No. I thought I was speaking for Rob. Maybe Rob has a different curiosity.
Rob, I think you and I are on the same wavelength here.
Right. Right. I'm just vocalizing. Puddle in a bucket. Here.
What's up with that? No.
What's up with that? Let's talk about it.
I am curious if, like, when is the last time you were really excited about like a technological improvement or upgrade or innovation in games? Like that, like you actually were like, fuck yeah. Like progress is amazing.
The physics systems in Breath of the Wild.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It still blows my mind every time I've just started going back and playing that game, and just the amount of opportunity to manipulate environmental space based on a set rule set of physics systems was like the most mind-blowing thing to me, and it just enhanced my experience of the game so significantly. So that would be mine.
The jump to high definition to me was like, oh no, video games have looked like shit forever, as it turns out. Like the first time I played games in like 720p, like on an Xbox 360, was like, I mean, I was one of those people who was buying like S-video cables on like their Dreamcast and stuff like that to make it look like marginally better. But yeah, I think the last time I was like impressed was actually more like the fidelity of the display. Like there have been things along the margins, like Natalie speaking to like physics and stuff like that. But and the last time like I had like a real holy shit moment was really the jump to high definition. And didn't have anything nearly the same with the jump to 4K. But because of the difference between SD and HD was just so stark that I was like, oh, I can see things in games. Like, I can see details in games that I love that I could not see before because there was just no way to see them. So I think that's the last one for me.
My answer is so dorky. But it was when Unity did fully robust 2D support, because I was making crappy 2D games in Unity using a 3D engine and basically rotating a cube with different static frames on it to make it look like a shitty, terrible walk cycle, sort of like a little like invisible cube was spinning across the screen, and like I only had it move on like the XY plane, but it was such garbage. And then yeah, when Unity was like, oh, you can actually make 2D games, here's a system for sprites and animation and all this other stuff, again, not being anything near a professional developer, but just having the tool set to do some basic things without having to make it a ridiculous, utterly goofy workaround. Was otherwise, I'm very basic. I, you know me, I like Into the Breach, I like Paratopic, I like games that look very specifically simple and just very well art directed. So I'm a nerd.
I'm thinking like the last time a game really like I was blown away is probably The Witcher 3, and to a degree there's an element of like that was a gorgeous game, it was a huge world, etc. But now I'm thinking about it and it was like, but how much of it was just like the affect of that world. Like, when I think about, like, the moments that, like, took my breath away, it was, like, when a breeze would blow across, like, the marshland in Velen, and, like, you'd hear all, like, the reeds rustling and everything, and, like, that knocked me on my ass. But was that a technological moment, or was that Foley work? And, like, a slight bit of animation coming together. You know what I mean? Like, was that a technological triumph, or was that a lot more to do with...
like ambiance,
yeah, like artistic craft. Yeah, artistic, yeah, craft, as opposed to just like raw technical power. And like, so I think the Witcher and games like it, I think that marks an era where I began to not be able to really tease apart, like, is this powered by Nvidia, is this tech, or is this craft.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for it's cool and potentially very good that artists and developers and tech artists and so on and so forth, everyone who works on the visuals and audio assets in a game, have a lot more tools to work with, right? They obviously have a lot more tools to work with now, depending on the engine or depending on whatever technology is available to them. But all it comes down to that craft, right? Artfully assembling these things and making sure they work and so on and so forth. So.
I just want to shout out Bad Company 2, the destructible buildings and the way that game looked. That was probably the last time I was like, fuck, this is okay. Tech is...
And like before, the predecessor to that is Red Faction having destructible walls, yeah, in the like PS2 era. That was like legitimately...
That was cool.
Oh, shit. Like, you could just turn around and blow up any wall in the game. And they faked it by, you'd open up some walls and then there'd be, you know, indestructible stuff behind it just for whatever reason. But the fact that, like, there's a guy in front of you, you could tunnel underneath and, like, go hit him from below was, like, genuinely, it felt revolutionary at the time.
Pretty cool. That Geomod, it was called Geomod,
yes,
right?
Correct.
They had a cool name for it. I do love the cool names for technology. That is a thing I do like. I like the FX chip and the Geomod and the...
Was the hair one called that NVIDIA was trying out a couple years ago?
Tress,
was
that effect, it?
Yeah, that's, yes, yeah, that's what I was talking about. That's the one
that
John McHale
had to immediately turn off, even if you had an NVIDIA card, because it just dragged the frame rate down.
Still doesn't work. Like, still, no. When I activate it, I'm like, God damn. And also, like, the hair looks really weird. It looks like, yeah, it looks like, you ever wonder what hair would look like if it was melting all over your head in real time? Well, no, Tress Effects is here to answer that question.
Thanks.
I keep thinking it's Triss Effects. Like, Triss is making
what was
your
most
hair melt,
noticeable with
Witcher
her
three. Well, there. Oh shit! Triss's tresses.
Yeah, it was.
Triss.
They built it to honor. Like, once the engineers in Nvidia saw Triss Marigold, they were like, "We must honor this character. We must paint you."
We must paint you with melting hair. I love it. It's very good. Very good video games. All right, let's do one quick dip into the bucket before we get a move on our weekends. And this one, Patrick, is very much for you, but it's for everybody, but it's referencing you as pro gamer. Pro gamer, Klepek, of course. This one comes in from Michael,
who says... That's Mr.
True
Pro Gamer.
True Gamer, I actually think. Well, I just want to be specific.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. True Gamer.
Yes.
Got to make Marvel's Spider-Man... True Gamer. We got a, you know, Tress Effects. We got it all right.
That's the shitty sequel where Peter Parker becomes an incel.
Oh, no.
Don't say it out loud, Rob.
Oh, no, it's real. Oh, God. Here's the question. It's from Michael.
Please.
Michael says, watching Patrick, quote, pro gamers rise up, unquote, Klepek, play Dead Cells is actually kind of discouraging me. I feel so much worse at the game watching someone going in blind,
good,
smoke bosses,
good,
and snag runes that I'm still, mm-hmm, trying to get after 2+ weeks of playing. Do you all ever get soured on a game from seeing someone else crush it? Or has any game been improved for you by watching it wrung out by experts? I'm still playing Dead Cells every night, but if I don't get that ram rune soon, I'm going to need to take a break for a bit. Thanks, Michael. Michael, your official nickname is now Ram Rune Soon. I just want you to know that. It's a good turn of phrase. That Ram Rune. Got to get it soon. All right, folks.
One of my favorite moments this year was wrecking through that game and people not believe. I was like, oh, this game must be easy then. And then getting like several emails that was just like, oh, shit, actually that game's hard. It turns out you're just good at it. So, sorry, didn't mean to be shitty in the chat. And I was like, yeah. Thank
Patrick you. Is very good at video games.
show. I'm very specific. I'm very good at a very specific type of video game, which is like a Dead Cells and its ilk. Like I will lay claim to being good at those types of games. But I can sympathize with the Michael's saying that we're like I don't know how to play strategy games, and so like I've dipped into like XCOM and into the Breach and like sort of like the entry level stuff, but things that require like higher level tactics and understanding of how those games play is like watching someone like Rob play it. It's like fuck, okay, I don't know anything what's going on here. Like peace, like I'm out. Like I just don't even bother. I just don't even want to learn. So I certain types of genres and strategy games in particular are like that genre for me where it is always it's just off. I just don't know how it works. I don't even. Like, when I've tried to play, like, board games that involve strategy where I know the rules, I'm no good at it. Like, I just don't think I'm particularly built for stuff like that. So watching higher level play, like, it doesn't impress me. It just makes me, like, yeah, feel like, yeah, I know. I can't do this. Why am I watching this? And then I just move on.
Yeah. Fair. I feel like I feel when I start watching someone I don't know, like some of the games that I've watched y'all play like throughout, you know, working at Waypoint and stuff like that were games that I wouldn't have been interested in because I didn't feel like they were for me. Like I wasn't the type of gamer that should play these games or would be good at these games. And something I've noticed is that by watching, I'm learning. And so which when I do end up like finally mustering up the courage to try the game, I'm not as bad at it as I thought I would be. Or if I am bad at it, continuing to watch, like when I first started playing Overwatch, I was terrible and I watched a lot of really high level play. And a lot of the time I was like, I'm never going to be these people. Like I'm never going to be at this level. I'm never going to be, you know, like diamond rank or whatever in Overwatch. But seeing the way that they react and being like, oh, I've found myself in that situation before. And like now that I've seen that reaction, like I feel like I'm embedding it into my brain and hopefully like my recall will recall that moment and I will be when I'm in the same situation again, be able to do that thing. So I feel like for me, often when I'm looking when I'm watching people who are better at me at games that I'm not good at, it's usually because I'm going in with the perspective or with the intention of wanting to learn. But I haven't tried Dead Cells yet, and I'm really afraid that once I try Dead Cells, I'm going to feel really sad because I'm going to be really bad at it. So I don't know. It's
just
hard.
Get good.
Okay.
There you go.
Just think about it.
Just think put about a montage on. Training montage. You'll be fine.
Of me playing the game.
Exactly, exactly. Rob, how
nope,
about you?
I will never. Thank you.
Fair.
You know, every day I wake up, I throw on a video of Patrick Klepek playing video games and just crushing them. And I'm like, all right, time to make some gains. And, you know, then I've...
Chugging that coffee, yeah. Watching those pro strats, ready for the day.
Yeah. Now, so this is something I'm actually trying to get over and try to get past, which is like... For the longest time, part of what's fun about games for me is the act of discovery for myself, like discovering stuff and like noticing shit and like seeing improvement and developing like as a player and understanding a game better, which is why I suck at most games. And I'm starting to realize like, no, I'm actually denying myself a lot of richness out of games by trying to like have this really like solipsistic approach to playing them. And I should actually be much more aggressive about, like, early in my relationship with the game. Like, after I started getting my feet wet, go out and see what, like, you know, what the meta is. What are the strategies that people are recommending? What are the tricks to, like, high-level play? Because that's going to help you, like, that's the stuff that's actually, like, maybe you could get those insights eventually, like, beating your head against the wall, like, aggressively. But... Mm-hmm. You'll actually get a lot more out of the game sooner if you just embrace the fact that, like, look, there's thousands of minds tackling the stuff all at once and trying to learn from each other. Join in that conversation. Don't, like, be sitting there trying to do it all by yourself. Because once you've gotten a few of those basic strategies, a game actually opens up more for you, not less.
Yeah, and I think, you know, actually doing it earlier on helps you with the way that like you might not have to do it later. Like if you kind of train your brain earlier on, like you're learning the game's logic and you're learning the game earlier on, and that way you have the space to figure it out for yourself later on, because you'll just be more naturally attuned to figuring it out after having, like you just said, Rob, like that foundation, those like basics down. And so I think if anything, it's better to do it earlier. If you're going to, well, I don't know.
It's like if you're teaching somebody literature or something, it actually helps to have those Norton's editions with the fucking annotations and notes and glosses explaining references stuff. Because you can just dump like a shitload of poetry in front of somebody and be like, this is the canon. It's great. Have at it. Like you're going to be sitting there like, I don't fucking get like 90% of this. This sucks. I hate this. But yeah, I don't know. For
helps to have scaffolding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I watch so many speedruns. I have speedruns on constantly throughout my day because I find it really weirdly soothing to watch somebody who's incredibly skilled at something sort of practice and go through the... It's like a very dojo martial artsy kind of weird mentality that I have where I'm just like, I'm enjoying watching someone practice and get better at their craft in a very weird and specific way. But I have started watching Into the Breach speedruns because I've also lost my mind and have been weirdly considering doing the marathon category of Into the Breach speedruns, which, yeah, this is a dark path, I think, actually. It's a dark path that I'm going down, but I definitely get a little bit of inspiration from that. So I do feel, I hear Michael, for sure. I get discouraged easily, especially when it comes to difficult games. I will go in with a great attitude, something like Bloodborne or a Dark Souls, and I will get through a decent amount and I will have a good time, and then I will sort of get myself to the Zen mode and get through and get through and get through, and then I start doing the death spiral of misery and sadness and lose my mind doing it. So yeah, which is all to say, finding the balance is very difficult, Michael, but hopefully you're able to find some inspiration from the true pro gamer. Sorry, I got it wrong again, Patrick. What, it's
true gamer.
Pro gamer, the true gamer, the pro gamer, both. We doing both?
True gamer. True gamer. Gamers are pro gamers.
That's right. That's right.
Wow.
That's true gamers
I
are pro gamers.
I can't believe it.
I think if we learn one thing here today, it's that. It's that true gamers are pro gamers and vice versa. All right. If you have a question, you can
not
send
true,
it.
Not true, actually. I know. I want. No, it's not. It doesn't go
Let's
both
correct.
Ways.
Let's correct the record.
True gamers are pro gamers. Pro gamers are not necessarily true gamers.
I got you. There's something untrue about being a professional sometimes.
Hashtag watch the puddle.
God. Puddle Watch 2018. We got there, friends. If you have a question about
Wait for puddle signal.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Now it's getting a little dark.
It's all right. It's been dark.
Please take us out, Danielle.
It's darkgamingadvice.com. The subject question. If you got one of those.
P will lead us the way. He will send us the signal. He's inside.
Oh, God. Shout out to Bowen for letting us use his track, Miss You, off the EP Pell Machine. We're on Twitter at Waypoint. We're on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. We're on YouTube at Waypoint Vice. We're on twitch.tv/Waypoint. And we're everything we write, whether it's about puddles or signals or puddle signals, it's at waypoint.vice.com. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to us. We really do appreciate it. Patrick, when you're not looking for the signal or being the true gamer, where can people find you online?
You can follow me at P Anon.
Wow. I need
That's
a
it.
Go.
That's
As
the podcast.
Rob quickly goes to see if that account exists.
Oh, God. Rob, how about you?
At Rob Zachney.
Natalie.
At Natalie Watson.
I'm at Danielle Ryan.
Dan, you guys
I'm
read
sorry.
About these NVIDIA Turing chips? Holy shit.
Oh, no.
Talk about game changers.
Everyone, thank you for being here for the last episode of Waypoint Radio.
Goodbye.
I encourage you in all of your lives to be good and be good at it.
If you don't have the 2080 by next year, you're not gaming, son.
Pause. Natalie, you seem like you were distressed about your microphone.
Yeah, sorry.
Just because she threw it on the floor.
I just dropped
She was like,
it.
Where the fuck is my puddle? You see that E3 trailer?
Sure, so okay.
The puddle was huge. Huge. Prodigious puddle.
I think I'm fine. I think okay. I'm fine.
As long as your everything looks okay. Still going.
I'll point you to where in my track there's a large crash.
It's all right. You were pissed. I get it. You know, you're a gamer.
I am a gamer. A joyous one. At that. Gamer.
Provided you're getting
provided
your nice
I'm getting
reflective
all
surfaces.
Those peas. I want all my peas, and I want all peas for puddles and pixels.
That's right.
Peas
That's
for
right.
everything.
Yeah,
that
you're talking about puddle, it's an ocean. Gross anime games again. Different kind of pea.
Different pea.
That's a different kind of pea. I'm not talking about that kind of
What's
pea.
What's happening
today.
In those dungeons, Natalie? Making a different kind of puddles.
Uh oh.
I am.
Picking
not
up girls.
Talking about my. Anime games right now. This is not an anime podcast.
Talking
I'm
about
not
Marvel Spider-Man now, of course.
This
you
is
know.
A different type of anime where it's...
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics, all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.